Welcome back in, McElroy Cubic in the morning, 9 o'clock, Wednesday, October 20th. Let's go right to the Bud Light Hotline. Welcome in Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at B Marcello. Most of you remember him from the Auburn beat, now national college football writer for 247. Brandon, you had an interesting write-up just talking about Auburn, where they are after this Arkansas game, being ahead of schedule, and how things sort of look like they're beginning to come together. I mean, it's just for you to just share your overall opinion here now, halfway through season one of the Brian Harsin era as the Auburn head football coach.
Yeah, I think that, you know, watching that Arkansas game in person, it was very clear there in that second half that at least offensively, what we were seeing was finally a team kind of not necessarily understanding what they expect from Harsin, but being able to execute exactly what they want to see out of that offense in a way that I don't think we've seen throughout this season. And being able to you know, set up the right plays in these big moments. I keep thinking about the you know, the 71-yard touchdown pass where, you know, Brian Harsin said after the game that that wasn't usually a play he would have called right after that fourth down stop they had, because it was the very next play after that fourth down stop, which is kind of crazy to hear, you know, a little bit, because usually when there's a big momentum swing like that, that's when you kind of go for the jugular. But he said, listen, I don't usually call that type of play, but we had been kind of setting that up and realized that was the time to do it, and he had the trust in Bo Nix and to get that done. And I think that was really kind of a breakthrough moment for that offense. And, of course, watching that very final drive of theirs to kind of salt the game away and take a 15-point lead, melting that clock, getting the big throws when they needed it, getting the big plays out of Bo Nix when they needed it, whether it was on the ground through running or throwing the ball, obviously. I know it sounds silly. It was just like, well, yeah, they made plays. That's what they're supposed to do. But those were moments where you finally started to see that not only were they doing what Harsin was asking them, but they were executing it perfectly. And I think things are finally kind of coming around to where, you know, 3-4 weeks from now, if fans are looking back at Auburn going, wow, we're all of a sudden a top 12 team or maybe even better, you could look back at that Arkansas game and say that was kind of the moment where everything kind of changed for us.
When you look at the, I guess, the growth of the program, it's obviously not going to happen overnight. I do think they were, last weekend's game against Arkansas was a little bit more about Arkansas being out of gas, not because I don't respect Auburn, I do very much, but I feel like that score and maybe just the performance was just slightly inflated based on just how deflated Arkansas was. However, if I go back a week earlier, that's where I really started to feel better about the Auburn Tigers, is that I thought they played Georgia pretty well. And I know the final score was a 24-point margin of defeat, but if you look at the end of the half, you look at a couple plays that were left on the field, a couple of the big plays given up, they were probably 3 or 4 plays away from making that game real tight for the Georgia Bulldogs, which is something we haven't seen very often this year. So I guess, which performance was it for you that made you more of a believer in Auburn and what they can do this year?
I think it's still the Arkansas game, and that's because, you know, I also think of this, that, you know, drop passes by the receivers have been plaguing them all season. I don't know if they had a drop pass at all in that Arkansas game, and they had plenty of opportunities to drop those balls. And to do that on the road where they were playing in front of a sold-out crowd and it was pretty loud was impressive to me, considering where they were just a week or two ago and all those drops they've been having. So I think they just executed better. I know, like you said, Arkansas was out of gas, especially defensively, and they were without their best, you know, safety on the team, and without a starting cornerback as well. But I still think I look at that Arkansas game as just a better overall performance than that Georgia game, because I still saw the same things that have been issues for them against the Bulldogs. I didn't see that against Arkansas.
Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at @BMarcello. We were having an interesting conversation before you joined us about LSU and what's next. And the descriptions that are thrown out about what the next coach has to be, will be, blockbuster hire, hire a star, splash hire, whatever that is. How many of those names, one, are really out there? Two, could LSU actually go get, in your opinion?
You know, that's what's so interesting about this. It's like we're, you know, how can I say this? A lot of these early names you always hear, and I've been doing this for 12 years now, all these early names you always hear, they're being thrown out by agents. Not a lot of them are legit, you know? And as a reporter, you believe they're legit and you trust your sources, but this rarely, I mean, you throw out all these big names. All right, they sound great, gets the fans excited, helps out the agent. But the thing is that just because Scott Woodward, the new AD there at LSU, has a history of being involved in some big hires, Chris Peterson at Washington when he was an associate AD there, and obviously at Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, just because he's going to want to maybe try to make that type of hire doesn't mean necessarily that's the best fit for them or the one that will actually show the most interest. I mean, here we are just a couple of days into this search, and you've already had Dabo Swinney and Jimbo Fisher, two names that have been mentioned for that job, publicly saying, yeah, I have no interest in that. Now, then people go cynical these days, go, well, I don't believe that for a second because of this, this, and this. People say that all the time. Yeah, but they were pretty emphatic the way they said it. They didn't hesitate. They didn't walk around it or anything like that. And they're in some big, pretty big contracts. And, of course, Fisher won't be financially penalized if he leaves. But I think we're getting lost here where we just feel like that every big job that comes open, there's automatically got to be big names on it. And then that stuff starts to cool down, and we start looking. Then people start getting disappointed going, oh, what's our second or third option? And to me, and this is without talking to any agent or anybody tied to LSU's coaching search, to me it seems like the best hire to make out of all this is the one that just makes sense, and that's Billy Napier at Louisiana. The guy is an incredible recruiter. He's the leading recruiter at Louisiana as a head coach. He's not just the head coach CEO type. He's the reason why they've had the best recruiting classes in the last 3 years in the Sun Belt at Louisiana. They got a gigantic support staff that he's kind of modeled, obviously, after the Alabama system and really what everybody else is doing in the SEC nowadays. And he's a Saban protege, but he's adapted it to make it fit at Louisiana. And a lot of other coaches have tried to do that over these last 5 years or so at these smaller schools, and they've been unable to do it, even by hiring extra help, so to speak, of the support staff. Well, he's been able to do it. He's able to do it from day one there. He's a fantastic recruiter, fantastic coach, and I think he's a guy that should be near the top of the list, if not at the top of the list. But, you know, listen, I'm not knocking the reporting of anybody like that, but it just seems that every coaching search, when I start seeing these first names, they just, the regurgitation of these obvious names, it's just, sometimes we just got to stop talking to these agents, man, for information.
No, I mean, Luke Fickell's a candidate for every job. What do you mean? Matt Campbell, he's taking every job. I mean, it just lacks any level of creativity. Can we just think outside the box for 5 minutes? It's just the same team.
Exactly.
Can we consider fit, perhaps? You know, I mean, stuff like that. But to me, personally, Brandon, like, I don't think the fit at SC is the same as LSU, and yet, according to all the people that I hear or read, it's all the same guys that are candidates at both. But then again, what do I know? When we look at some of the games that are going to be played coming up in the final month of the season, is there a game right now that you think Bama needs to be cognizant of? Because right now they're going to be likely a heavy favorite against everybody remaining on the schedule. The Auburn game looms, however, and there's a couple other tough spots as well. So who do you think Bama needs to be most mindful of in the final month for them to be able to run the table and get to the SEC championship game with only one loss in the loss column?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, listen, they should beat everybody else on their schedule by double digits. And, you know, the toughest game remaining on that schedule is going to be Auburn in the Iron Bowl in Auburn. You know, two reasons. It's in Auburn. And then secondly, we just know how big that game is and how much the coaches put into that. And I know it's the first year of the Harsin era, but they've been focused on that game all season and all year since he's been on campus. So that's the one they should be worried about. Outside that, I mean, they should beat Auburn by double digits, and they should get to the SEC championship game pretty easily, in my opinion, but and then face Georgia. You know, I think the only game remaining on the schedule in the SEC that will affect the SEC championship game, really, at this point, is going to be Georgia-Florida. And I know some people will go like, what? The way Florida's playing? They just lost LSU? Yeah, Dan Mullen, he's very inconsistent week to week, but in that game in Jacksonville, 50-50 crowd split, and the way that offense can play and it's capable of playing, that could give Georgia, I say fits, it gets that defense, but some small fits to where maybe they can get in the 20s in that game, and if Florida's defense somehow can slow down Georgia's offense a little bit, maybe that's a game. But you know, outside that, I don't think there's really going to be much challenge for Bama or Georgia the rest of the season.
So when you talk about challenges with teams and potentially making the college football playoff, we had a little bit of this discussion also yesterday with Cincinnati, now ranked second, and Brandon Marcell of 247 Sports joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. What teams are actually in control of whether or not Cincinnati makes this year's college football playoff?
The only teams that are going to control them, keeping them out of the playoff at this point, are the ones on their schedule. No one outside of that. You know, everybody talks about maybe Ohio State or whatever. Ohio State wins out, they're getting in at this point. The only thing that keeps Cincinnati out at this point, in this juncture, in my opinion, is themselves losing to a team remaining on their schedule. And a lot like Alabama, you know, you look at that schedule and you go, where's the challenge there? SMU, November 20th, is their biggest game. But that's in Cincy. Everything else should be smooth sledding for them. They've got Navy this weekend, which could be not necessarily a close game, but an interesting game because that'll affect just how Cincinnati could play with tempo and everything. But, you know, that SMU game is the only one I see on the schedule that could potentially be some type of road bump on the way. But as long as they win out, they're going to get in. I don't know if it'll be as the number two seed. I think they're probably going to drop to 3 or 4 when all is said and done, even if they went out. But they're the only ones that are going to keep themselves out.
All right, Brandon, great stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Good catching up with you. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at BMarcello. Joined us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. Did you agree with sort of his assessment on the rest of the schedule for Alabama?
The one thing I would say is I think the LSU game becomes a little more intriguing with them kind of essentially saying, we got nothing to lose. We're going to throw everything at you. And that's kind of what happened last week. Still some talent on that roster. And you know they're going to play hard because a lot of young guys. And young guys with talent is always something that you need to be mindful of. But yeah, I would agree. I would say Auburn is the toughest game remaining on the schedule.
Okay. So never a tough decision for lunch. It's always Tex-Mex with a twist from Tostadas. The Mexican pizza, pomegranate guacamole, Kaneka queso, street corn queso, the variety of tacos like honey jalapeno fried chicken, firecracker shrimp, smoked brisket, all there at Tostadas. Tonight, college day, even your expired college ID, Greg, you get half off all appetizers and drinks with that student ID. Stop by downtown Homewood Square and visit our friends at Tostadas. They're located right across from Soho Social. They have specials each and every night, and that spring happy hour is still going from 4 to 6 p.m. Do not forget, Saturday and Sunday, the Tex-Mex brunch from Tostadas. You don't want to miss that because it is phenomenal. Getting you set for football on Saturday and Sunday, and they'll have them on the TVs there inside at the bar or potentially outside on the patio. And it looks like today's going to be another great day to get on that patio at Tostadas. Tell them you heard about them right here on McElroy and Cubic in the morning, and check them out online at theflattaco.com. So a lot that we sort of covered there with Brandon Marcello, including LSU and who's next and what type of coach maybe needs to be next. Golden Domer wants to chime in on that topic. Domer, welcome into the show.
Top of the morning, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Doing great. Thank you.
Look, guys, anybody who thinks that Brian Kelly is going to leave the shadow of the Golden Dome for the fumes of a swamp mud pit of Louisiana doesn't know much about Brian Kelly. I mean, guys.
Who said he was going to take that job?
A lot of people have been insinuating that. I'm not just talking about you, but it's just in the media. It's a kind of a big story, a big lean.
Well, I wonder why.
And Greg, you put that out there early on that you thought that was a serious consideration.
No, that would be my first. You know, if I were an AD and I had an opening, Brian Kelly would be at the top of my list of people I would call. He might say no to me, but I would still make the call.
I respect that, but the point I'm trying to make is a lot of people are putting a lot of, you know, real respect behind that and think it might be a possibility. There's something that a lot of people need to understand. A championship is not equal everywhere you are. You know, everybody thinks, oh, you won a championship, so that's just as equal as winning a championship somewhere else. That's completely false. If you win a championship as the manager of the Yankees, you go down in history. If you win it with the Mariners, we forget about you in 3 years, okay? If you win a championship as a Lakers coach, you go down in NBA history. If you win at Notre Dame, you go down in college football infamy. If you win at LSU, you get fired 2 years later. Guys, it's not
even comparable. We still know their names, though.
Now we do, but for long we won't. I'm telling you, in 15 years, ask somebody what Ed Orgeron did, and they'll think of a Cookie Monster commercial. I mean, the guy's going to be forgotten in college football history, okay? So the point I'm trying to make, and something else that a lot of people don't think about, okay? Notre Dame has been playing football for a long time. Never in history has a coach left for another job. Just think about that. Never in history has a Notre Dame football coach chose another school over Notre Dame. It's happened almost everywhere else, but not at Notre Dame. Never even been chosen for an NFL job. When Notre Dame wants you, you stay there, and they make sure you stay there. So the point I'm trying to make is
maybe they haven't won enough at Notre Dame to justify getting considered elsewhere.
I would say in the last 20 years, they've had a downtick of coaches, but I know that you weren't raised a Bama boy, but go back and study that down era of the Bama time. They had their own little downtime. They had their own little downtime. I think they had about four coaches and three different strip clubs in that little era. But I think it is fair to say,
Domer, who on that list of guys that you're talking about had been pursued heavily.
Right.
Okay, no fair point. I mean, Charlie Weiss was early on mentioned for NFL jobs, you know, being the quarterback guru we like to hear a lot
about.
He did.
He had that one good game against SC, but other than that,
He had a good season, one game away from going to the national championship, lost to one of the greatest teams in college football history. But after that, it was.
I think Holtz probably was. I mean, he wasn't covered the same way then, but I guarantee people were coming after him and wanted him. I don't know about Bob Davey or Tyrone if people were going after them.
All right. How about Air Parsegan, Frank Leahy? I mean, it goes on and on.
Notre Dame was the top of the mountain. That was back in the 1930s.
Actually in the 40s.
I'm not talking about the four horsemen. I'm not talking. I don't care about the 50s. I care about now.
Thank you.
What about the 80s, Greg? I mean, I don't care about the 80s.
It's a different era.
Well, born in 96.
You're right. It's a different era. But let me just ask you this and just be honest with yourself.
I am.
If Brian Kelly was to win a national championship at Notre Dame, which he's been knocking on the door, he's been an elite quarterback away from winning. Honestly.
He's been excellent. I love Brian Kelly. You know that.
Yeah. He's been an elite quarterback away from winning a championship. That's really what the difference has been. If he was to win at Notre Dame with the academic standards, with the schedule difficulty that we talk about, with the national brand, he would go down in history. And it would elevate him higher than any other job he could take and win a championship. I mean, even if Nick Saban was to leave the great and almighty Alabama, which I have tons of respect for Alabama, and then Brian Kelly scooted in there and won a national championship, that means almost nothing. If he brings back Notre Dame,
ask Les Miles how he's perceived. I agree with you. No one thinks Les Miles is great. He won a championship with other teams' players. Other guys' players.
What I'm saying. So the point is Notre Dame, everybody always equates to the best job as the easiest place to get a championship. And that is so foolish. That is so foolish. A great man never look for the easiest road. If you win at Notre Dame, you can say, I won with these challenges. I won with this schedule. I won with these academic standards. And I did something that somebody hasn't done in 30 years.
But, Domer, you have to counter that with Notre Dame also comes with other inherent advantages that a lot of other schools don't have.
I agree with that. A lot of people look at Notre Dame's academic standards as a disadvantage. But I can't tell you how many players we get from other schools because of our academic standards. Like, in other words, Kyle Hamilton. The only reason Kyle Hamilton chose Notre Dame over Georgia was because of our academic standards. So it is an advantage in many, many situations. So, you know, there's always a lot of Notre Dame hate out there, and I understand that. But I just think, guys, that if anybody really honestly thinks that – I mean, have we watched the Gator Boys? I mean, if y'all really think that Brian Kelly is going to leave Notre Dame, one of the highest academic institutions in the country, and ride down there to the swamps of Louisiana, I don't think you're paying attention.
Thank you for the call. I haven't – Greg said if it was his list, who he would go after first, and Brian Kelly was short on that list.
Correct.
I have never even considered him a candidate for that job. I do, however, disagree. Let's just fast forward. Let's just say next year, because it's not going to be this year. Next year, Notre Dame gets their act together. They win a national championship. I want to know how many people listening to our show are going to look at Brian Kelly so much different than they did Urban Meyer, or they did Bob Stoops, or they did Dabo Sweeney, or Nick Saban, or even Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. Because I would not, personally. I would not watch the end of that game and see him holding up that giant gold muffler at the end of it and say, man, now that guy, he is, it's Bear, Saban,
Brian
Paterno, Eddie Robinson, and Brian Kelly's now up there. Like, it's not, no. Because everything that you mentioned that is of difficulty and complicates it, there are other advantages. The NBC contract, the national fan base, hell, the global fan base is different than almost any other college football program. There are advantages that obviously can be advantageous and help you win when you're the head coach at Notre Dame. There's many things I think that are also difficulties. So continue that conversation. There is a – I want you to think about this during the break. What is your favorite sideline gimmick of all time? Whether it's turnover, touchdown,
I already know where you're going
celebration.
Sounds good.
Whatever it is.
Yep.
Think about your favorite, because I now have mine.
You're going to like my answer.
Next on Macaroli and Cubic in the Morning. So what is your favorite ever sideline gimmick in college football? There have been many. Some have stood the test of time, like the ball out belt, which I'm sure we're going to get tweets in any moment saying that this whole thing was invented and started in Tuscaloosa, that was, you know, how sideline gimmicks got their start.
But built by Bama.
But there have been a lot of fun ones. Some of them I see. Louisiana had one Tuesday night last week after an interception, and I honestly, Cotter and I didn't even know what it was. We couldn't even tell. Just some, and we've seen obviously turnover chain, pimp canes. We've seen a lot of different things. So think about yours. We're going to come back to it in just a moment. But you need to go to Cahaba Valley Road and see Backyard Adventures, because if you need a playground built in your backyard, we were outside on mine for hours yesterday afternoon. Kids love it, all three of them. And you get to customize it, but you can go let the kids jump around, play, swing, jump, climb on all the different options right there at Cahaba Valley Road, and then decide what you want. And then Jeff and the guys are going to customize it for you. And they come put it together in your backyard. If you need them to measure your backyard, print out what it's going to look like, they can also do that for you. They're going to be warranted. If you move, they'll move them, and it's no work for dad. Basketball goals, also installation of those, no matter what, concrete, wherever it is, they can handle all that for you also. But we know Christmas coming up. If you want a playground for Christmas or basketball goal installed for Christmas, you need to get in touch with Backyard Adventures now. 408-4386, 408, the number 4FUN, or go visit BackyardAlabama.com, because there could be some shipping issues and some backorder issue on parts. So if you want that playground built, visit BackyardAlabama.com today or call 408-4386. Ask Jeff and the guys to help you there. GMAC, what is your favorite ever sideline gimmick?
It's not even close.
Turnover, touchdown, whatever it is.
It's not even close.
Okay.
The Kennesaw State turnover plank is number one. It's not even close.
It's just kind of the middle finger to all the other sideline gimmicks.
Which is exactly what all sideline gimmicks deserve.
It is basically a piece of wood that they like drew a smiley face on.
It looks like my 3-year-old
drew the
plank.
Right. If you said to him, hey, this is gonna how you're going to celebrate interception, draw it up. And that's about what it looks like right there.
All right, so I'm going to tell you the thing about that plank. I know y'all are a little older than I am. It's actually from a TV show. It's called Ed, Edd n Eddy. And there's a guy on the show named Johnny, and his imaginary slash best friend was a piece of wood named Plank. So just educating the masses. Just,
love it.
But yeah, that to add to that, yeah, that was pretty good.
Still tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Basically saying, cool, this is the dumbest thing ever. Let's embrace how dumb it is.
Okay.
Here's a plank. Well, after you make a nice play on the field, you get to hold this up, and we'll take a picture of you.
Understandable.
Okay. And they dress him up, and it's funny. Like, I think it's funny.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious. Damien, your favorite turnover gimmick.
It's been, I don't know if it was.
Oh, I don't care if I don't care if it was one game.
Hey, yeah, I've seen they've had like the turnover like throne where like they'll have the elevated seat.
I forget who had that, but I remember
Houston?
That.
Was it Houston? Or
yes, I believe it was.
I think
Houston.
It was Houston. Had like the crown and everything. That's pretty dope. I like it.
It's Tulane fun. Had the Mardi Gras beads, turnover gimmick. Memphis had a turnover robe. I don't know if that was like for Jerry Lawler. Florida State at one point had a turnover backpack. Oregon State had a turnover chainsaw. That was a real thing. That's obviously fun. SMU did they had a crown, turnover crown that you would wear. Actually, here we go. Boise had the turnover throne.
Okay. Yeah, that's yeah.
Wasn't Miami the first one with the turnover chain?
I think somebody else, I mean, we know this started in Tuscaloosa.
Tuscaloosa would have never happened if not for Notre Dame starting college football.
There are some, there's a Twitter account, Belts by Dan, and I know that he made a couple of belts before the Alabama belt was made for some smaller schools to do something like this. But I don't know who exactly was the first one to start this. Turnover chain obviously made it famous. It helped that you had a team that got a lot of turnovers that year. Like, it would be, if we started this and then Iowa was next in line this year, obviously you're going to highlight that because it's coming out a lot. And Miami put a little extra swag on it too. And I think that obviously helps a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, but we've seen failures. You know, we've seen the Nerf basketball goals where guys get to go dunk.
Yeah, and all of a
sudden, guys get to go sign their name on the whiteboard. We've seen the turnover trash can, which, if the kids get excited about it, who cares?
That's all that matters.
I mean, if it brings any minuscule amount of motivation, it's working. So you can say
it helps the team win.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's what
and,
wins.
And, well, it's not doing that right now at UNLV.
Oh, gosh.
It is not doing that yet. They're working on that. But when Charles Williams, running back, scored a 75-yard touchdown to give UNLV a 10-7 lead, which in and of itself is rare, he sprinted to the sideline, over the bench, over to the barrier before you get to the stands, and grabbed a lever on a giant slot machine and pulled it down that they now have on the sideline at UNLV games. Now, the screen graphics have dollar bills shooting up, or it has the team's logo, or other different things that will pop up, but it is a $60,000 giant slot machine that weighs 700 pounds.
Goodness gracious.
And it will be on the sideline for UNLV games. Apparently, it is a momentum slot machine.
Mm-hmm.
And players do not know exactly when they're going to be able to have access to it. So it's not necessarily just recover, fumble, get to go pull the slot.
And I was like,
you know, it's not score touchdown. No whammies, stop. That's not necessarily how it goes. But, hey, if you've seen the video that's floating around of it, 85% of the team's over there going bonkers when this kid pulls the lever. I mean, they're going nuts.
And I'm good with it.
So
it's clever,
when you
right? it's
when
smart.
You stink, you need something like that. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're description of them probably is a little nice, maybe a little light.
Call it how you see it.
Whatever happened to like wanting to intercept a pass or score a touchdown so that would help your team win? Like, whatever happened to that?
No.
Like, you know, I really, if I played, let's say safety, and I intercepted a pass, I was just really happy because that means my offense got to go back on the field and I got to go to the sideline and rest.
Yeah.
You know,
it was like, the best part about scoring touchdowns.
Exactly.
Get a rest.
After like a 17-play drive, if I scored on a QB sneak, You know what I was really excited to do?
Go sit down.
Have a little Gatorade.
Absolutely.
Don't give me a chain. Don't give me rings. Don't give me a wooden plank.
Don't make me
pull a slot machine. Give me some salt tablets and a Gatorade.
Yeah.
Right? And by the way, I wouldn't hate a towel because I'm probably sweating profusely. That's what I would have looked for.
That's a good point.
Just saying.
But
I'm old school and no fun.
UNLV 0-6
on the
year.
So that's why it's a moment. I mean, it's not for good,
I can remember vividly. I can literally remember my offensive lineman looking at me and say, good God, please can we score on this play? I am on the verge of death.
There was nothing worse than an 11 or 14 play drive when you ran the ball 10, 12 times of those and you're just thinking, please God, get in the end zone.
Please, please God score.
Man.
How come you never see the lineman with the turnover stuff and the
There was the one high school coach that had the syrup in a holster, and when he saw a guy pancake somebody, he would dab up a little syrup in their mouth, like they get a little shot of syrup.
That's kind of gross.
I think that went away with COVID, but they eliminated that.
That is really nasty.
With that, but
oh man,
listen, they're all stupid. But it's like we said, the turnover trash can was literally the dumbest college football item I think I had ever seen.
Oh.
But kids were motivated by it. They wanted to take a football and chunk it in that thing.
Uh-huh.
And
I would.
It got them going.
I would.
But I'm with Greg. I wonder how – I don't think I would remember to go do it. So if I played safety or linebacker, or if I played receiver and I scored a touchdown, I just don't think my brain would be, I have to go straight to our gimmick that we have. Now, I know some of them are bringing it out to them. Like, Ole Miss has the giant shark tooth necklace, whatever, and they'll meet them 5 yards before they get out of bounds and, go ahead and crown them or chain them, whatever. Like Rockefeller would, you get the chain. Yeah.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. Iced out.
So, yeah, but this was up. This was next level.
Yeah.
I don't know how much further you can go than a $60,000, 700-pound slot machine.
Momentum slot machine. So, you can burst off like a 40-yard run and not score. And they're like, hey, get him out. Go to the slot machine. Cha-ching. And,
yes.
You're punting on the fourth down.
I do not align with the youth of today. As a 33-year-old, I feel like I'm 80.
Well, and here's the thing.
Don't get it.
It's a gap, man.
It is a real...
Oh, my God.
It's a gap. It's
played 12 years ago. I retired from the league 8 years ago,
You're an old soul anyway. So
nah, but not that old.
Not yet, but...
Not that. Maybe I don't watch Ed Nettie in my off time, but not that old.
I've actually never heard of that.
I've heard of it. This is when I was young.
Do we need to run back through the professional and college football players that you don't know who they were?
Right.
Or the professional athletes that you've never heard of?
Troy Aikman.
I mean, I didn't see him play, but
Andre Tippett. Who did he play for?
I couldn't tell you.
Dude's in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Yeah. Age.
But it is a real casino caliber slot machine that was made by an actual gambling company. So it's not a novelty slot machine. And because of that, they probably will not be able to travel with it. Because outside of Las Vegas, you're not going to be able to have it.
They didn't take this one all the way through.
Well, it's 700 pounds. So, I mean, who?
Right.
Who are you really going to take the time to get it to New Mexico State for a game?
Just throw it in there with the band stuff.
I don't know exactly who's left on the UNLV schedule this year, but they're at Nevada, so they're good there.
Oh, yeah.
They can take it to that one. And then you're at New Mexico, and you're at Air Force, so not going to be able to get that thing to Colorado there.
Nah.
Other things legal for that game, but not necessarily the slot machines. But nonetheless, my favorite gimmick now is the giant slot machine there at UNLV. So as football season rolls along, you can try to figure out what your favorite turnover or touchdown gimmick is in college football, but also know changes in the weather are coming, and you can protect your HVAC system with a checkup from a trained comfort specialist. It's going to give you peace of mind for the cooler weather to come. They're the official partner of Jocks, and you can find a comfort specialist near you at train.com. Like we say, it's hard to stop a train. It's hard not to be stopped by the Georgia defense. It is a performance from over the weekend that we have not really had a long discussion about just yet, and I want to begin to get into it next on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Cubic in the morning, 9:45 a.m., Wednesday, October 20th. I heard McLaren there, McElroy. Number one cereal for you.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, duh.
Attaboy. Oops. You're not as far away from the youth as you
think. It'd be number two for me.
What is number one?
Let me guess. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. I freaking knew it.
I love it.
God, you are so lame. Never, that is awful. Never.
I was actually in yesterday. It was weird. I was the only one in our house for like 3 hours around lunchtime. That never happens. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to grab something to eat real quick. I'm looking around and there's just not that one much there. And I look at the bottom of our pantry and there's a box of Lucky Charms. I was like, man, I haven't had Lucky Charms in years.
So,
I didn't even know we had those.
So overrated.
And agreed. I dominated like three bowls of Lucky Charms.
Those things are trash sandwich.
Terrible.
They're not terrible. I'm not saying they're better than Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but they're definitely not terrible.
They're garbage juice.
They're overrated.
Garbage juice.
They're awful.
Like I would eat Rice Krispies with no sugar before I would get
Rice Krispies. Sneaky, not terrible.
It's
the other one that's solid though. That I really genuinely do like.
How are you going to poop on Lucky Charms and tell me you like Rice Krispies?
I will eat Rice Krispies.
Rice Krispies aren't terrible, for real.
I ate them a lot as a kid.
Honey Nut Cheerios, most underrated.
That's number two for me. It's right below Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Bow.
Like it's
in
by
there.
Far. And it's good for you. Good. You got your cholesterol under.
Come on. Real good
it's
for
you. Got your cholesterol under control and everything.
So good for you.
Look at it.
Tell you what is good for you, and that's going to Tickets for Less for your local source for Bama football tickets. Find the best selection of seats without added taxes and per-ticket service fees that you'll find on other sites at ticketsforless.com. Call today at 205-758-1199 or visit their office at 1410 University Boulevard or shop online at ticketsforless.com.
So here's an interesting practice. Speaking of the best cereals, the best players on Georgia's defense, if you were going to rank them.
Oh, boy.
Now, can we just say consensus, Jordan Davis?
Yes.
Yes.
He is that dude.
He's the only guy that no one else has. You know what I'm saying? There's so many other guys. There's so many other great linebacker safeties, whatever. The only guy in college football that nobody else has is Jordan Davis. There's no one like him.
Mm-mm.
There's a lot of good D tackles. Yep. There's no one that's that dominant.
Not even close. And just what he can do from a power perspective, we've seen him track down some screens and some perimeter runs.
I don't want him doing that.
No. The one outside zone that he caught against Arkansas, you're kind of like, hold on a second. Like it was a strike, shed, 7 yards lateral, catch outside zone. You're thinking, that's not right.
It was at that point where I would have gone to the opposing sideline as Sam Pittman said, Kirby, I would like to politely cancel the game.
Or could you take him? Can we see his birth certificate?
Yes.
Like pull the old Little League baseball deal. There's no way he's eligible. I need to see his birth certificate, please.
That guy is 37 years old.
Right.
That's a grown
with a motor.
Man.
Yes.
Right. I play Little League baseball.
I need a blood test on that dude because there's no way that dude
who is
not
child?
Taking performance enhancers. His performance is far too high. But he is. He's a beast. He's a brick wall. He is, without question, the best player on Georgia's defensive front.
Yeah, I played baseball with a guy named John Whidden, and he actually coaches the offensive line at Jackson Olin now. And he was just bigger than all the other kids, like way bigger.
Yeah, right.
And every game for the entire season, the opposing team would ask to see his birth certificate.
I love that.
As like an 8-year-old, because I played up a year. Now, I'm 8.
Humble brag.
I don't really know what's happening.
Humble brag.
But even at 8,
he's like just,
you get to fourth or fifth game, and they keep doing it. You're kind of like, haven't we done this? Like all the other, there's only 4 teams in the league or whatever. Like,
why him?
We've all done it. But you've seen it by now.
It's seen.
We have to keep doing that. So. Yeah, I would go the birth certificate route with Jordan Davis.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, just try something. But I think it becomes an interesting practice after him because Channing Tindall is playing like an absolute missile right now. And he was a guy that I saw in the spring, and just you see his build, and you're kind of like, whoa. He looks like a big, beefy linebacker that's probably not going to be able to run so well. Because then when he's next to some of the other guys like an N'Kobe Dean or a Nolan Smith, they're sleeker, lighter. They're kind of like the Auburn mold of linebackers. But then you see Tindall like Channing Tindall outrunning those guys sometimes, and you're just like, I don't understand it. Well, then now Jalen Carter looks to be maybe more quick than he's ever played on the interior of that Georgia defensive line, and he's making plays. Adam Anderson leads the team in sacks, 6'5", 245-pound star some of the times, by the way. And it's just this juggling act after Jordan Davis, Greg, begins of who's the next best player, and then who's the next best player after that. Right. And then if you're ranking all defensive players in the SEC, if you had your top 10, I mean, how many Georgia players would be in there? Four? Five?
Probably
four.
I mean, it's insane to think about.
I'd probably take at least three. I don't know if I can go beyond that. I think there's some good defensive players in this league. Some really good defensive
but
players.
But Davis and Carter, for me, are in there.
Oh, that's a lock.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lock.
And I think, for me, Tindall's in there. So, I mean, if you're ranking top 10, Channing Tindall's in there, and then I think you have a conversation about in Kobe Dean. I do.
I see. Are we going based off of capabilities, or are we going based off of actual
performance? We're talking playing football right now.
Like, okay,
we're not talking, this is not an NFL draft perspective of what they could grow into or
no,
if they
I'm
get in the right
scheme.
No, I'm
talking more along the lines of if Christian Harris starts playing to his potential, then he would be on the list. But right now, yeah, I don't think he's there right now this year. Can get there for sure. But you think, all right, so let's go on Bama's defense. Great players. Will Anderson.
Will Anderson's at
lock.
I think it's Will Anderson, Jordan Davis, 1A, 1B, 1B, 1A, however you want to play it. Those are the two best defensive players in the league.
I agree. All right, so those two right now. You think Bama, anyone else on Bama's defensive line? I mean, Fadarian Mathis is really good.
He's having a good year, but I don't know if he'd be in my top 10 SEC defensive players.
Okay, what about safeties?
No. I mean, if you're just ranking positions, we can have a conversation. But if you're just saying overall top 10 defensive players in the league, I don't think so.
I would probably agree. I think both safeties are really good. But that, I mean, we're talking about another level. But yeah, Will Anderson, without question, in there. I think Georgia at least has three. I think Kobe Dean right now has played excellent. And Tindall, like you alluded to, has played excellent. I feel like the league, for the most part, is hurting in the secondary. If I'm going to kind of get down to brass tacks, I don't feel like there is a bona fide superstar in the secondary. The one that would probably stick out to me, even though he hasn't played as good the last few weeks, would be Jalen Catalan at Arkansas.
Still been really good.
Still very good.
Jalen Foster at South Carolina has been good.
Very solid. But I don't know if there would be anyone at corner right now where I'm like, oh man, I can't throw in that direction.
Could you make an argument that Roger McCrary has been the best corner in the league so far?
I think Roger's had a really good year. I can't say I'm that surprised. I don't know if I would go as far as to say he's the best corner in the league.
Emmanuel Forbes has had a great year for Mississippi State.
Forbes is always going to have good numbers. I think Emerson's good as well, but they both got roasted in the open field last week, and that will scar me in my mind for quite a while. We can't forget about a couple of guys on A&M's defense. There's a lot of really good players on that defense.
Because, well, Leon O'Neal was great against Alabama, but I haven't seen it every week. I mean, I think he's had a good year, but I think he's been inconsistent. Maybe that's kind of the story of most of these guys we're talking about.
I think that's kind of where we're at. I would say that right now the secondary play across the board in the league is not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be really, really good. But when we're sitting there saying, yeah, this guy's good, but, you know, he's been inconsistent. You could literally say that about every secondary player, including that, by the way, of Derek Stingley in the two games he played. So
he's not good against UCLA and really good against Central Michigan.
For six plays against Central Michigan or whatever, however many he played. But you really look at it. I mean,
optional.
And I think part of that has to do with the greatness of the wide receivers in this league.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
There's a lot of really good receivers. I would say there's a lot of solid safeties, but I wouldn't say that there's been anyone in the secondary that would right now, as crazy as this may sound, outside of Jalen Catalan is the one secondary defender where I would say that dude is definitely a top 10 defender in this league.
Yeah, he can change the game.
He changes the game. There's not that many others many ups and downs. It's all in the front seven. That's where the strength of the league is right now.
Trim by SunMed could change the game for you. A revolutionary new line of products in weight loss science featuring THCV, compound known in hemp to naturally suppress your appetite. They've got it now at your CBD store. Those locations are at Highway 280 by Bailey Brothers, 150 by the Cajun Cleaver, Trustville just off 459 in downtown and Five Points. Largest brick and mortar CBD retailer in the world. And they've got the USDA certified organic oil supplements and that stamp steel in stock today. Go check out the Trim by SunMed at your CBD store, where good health hits home. Great show today. Appreciate Tom Hart being with us as always. He's there every Wednesday. Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports also talking Auburn and LSU coaching search. Three-man front is next. We are back tomorrow, 7 to 10 a.m., right here on Jocks 94.5.